You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to the Dressage Today podcast, this month sponsored by both Kentucky Performance Products and Tribute Equine Nutrition. We have two sponsors this month, Aviva.
Well, that makes sense because we actually have two very exciting interviews. So we have a bonus interview for you guys. Many of you remember my first co-host, Stephanie Ruff, and Stephanie left us for greener pastures. She moved to the horse and she has started a new podcast. And so we brought her to ours to tell us about hers. And then we also got a request from some listeners to tell us more about the Israeli system of training and showing and qualifications. And so we have a wonderful interview from Naama Segev Hassan as our main interview. Yes. So tell us a little about Naama.
So Naama has over three decades of experience as a dressage rider, a coach, and a judge. She's a central figure in Israel's equestrian community. As a member of the National Equestrian Federation's Dressage and Education Committees, she plays a vital role in shaping the sport's future. She is co-founder and program manager of the Pegasus Project, Equestrian Leadership Project, which advances youth instructors and trainers in Israel. A dedicated educator, Naama serves as the chief examiner for the Federation, overseeing the certification and training of instructors and coaches at all professional levels. Outside of her official roles, she is a proud mother of three, including Maya, who continues the family tradition in both dressage and show jumping. She was really lovely to talk to.
Oh, she was so lovely. And her daughter, Maya, is an absolute joy. She rode for me when I was in Israel. Really super fancy horse. And she was just a joy to teach. Just a little sponge and so much improvement in the course of the lesson. So I know our listeners will enjoy listening to this interview.
Very cool. So you guys are going to have to wait to have a catch up with Aviva and I, and we are putting off our Ask the L question just because we are so packed full of goodness and fun listening opportunities. This is it, guys. We will talk to you next month. Enjoy the podcast.
And now a word from our sponsor.
You know that feeling when everything comes together. The rhythm, the balance, the connection. At Tribute Equine Nutrition, that same pursuit of excellence drives us to keep improving. We're upgrading our entire line with advanced formulations to better support your horse's health, performance, and longevity. To celebrate, we're hiding golden tickets in select bags, each one worth 40 free bags of feed, about a year's supply for one horse. Ready to elevate your program? Visit TributeEquineNutrition.com for a free, personalized feeding plan. If you're new to Tribute, your first bag is on us. And everything we make is backed by a 100% money-back guarantee. Be sure to mention Dressage Today sent you. Today, Aviva and I are really excited to be joined or rejoined by our friend Stephanie Ruff, the managing editor at The Horse. Hi.
Hi, Stephanie.
I'm back.
I know. I was going to say, welcome home.
So where have you been? What have you been doing?
Where have I been? Well, okay. So The Horse is part of Equine Network, where Dressage Today and Practical Horsemen are as well. So I'm just, you know, playing for a different team in the same league. So since I left there, I've been the managing editor at The Horse, doing a lot with their print publication. Okay. But we do more than just print. We have a quarterly print publication and a very, very big website, thehorse.com. And so I've switched from English disciplines to health and management. We do all kinds of health and management stuff, arthritis, ulcers, soundness issues, colic, neurological conditions, behavior, you name it. You know, we cover a lot of that. And the big thing is that our information is scientifically based, and we use researchers and veterinarians from all over the world. We interview and we follow studies and that sort of thing. And of all of that, out of all the things we cover, one of the most popular things we among our readers or, you know, visitors to the website or whatever, are nutrition topics. People are very interested in what they feed their horses.
Understandable.
So, yes, it is a big business, as we all know. Of us being horse owners, we all know that feed and hay is very big business. So one of the things we were looking to do is expand our reach outside of print publications. As we all know, print is, you know, not the most popular place where people find their information anymore. And so since we were looking to expand, we decided to launch a new nutrition podcast, and it's called Feeding Horses and hosted by yours truly.
Hence why I'm exciting.
Oh, yay. Shameless plug is why.
That's absolutely.
We definitely like shameless plugs from our friends.
So are all of your podcasts about nutrition or just the first one?
Of mine?
Yes. Okay.
It is feeding horses. It's all nutritionally based topics. It could cover a lot of different areas. But for the most part, it is all, if it has something to do with nutrition or how the horse eats or how the horse, or supplements are getting thrown in there as well.
Okay.
Then it can be part of the podcast.
What made you
pick
nutrition for a podcast specifically?
We picked it because it's popular. You know, when we were looking at what content is the most popular, a lot of nutrition topics came out among the most popular topics. Mm-hmm. And we also, in doing some research, didn't find another editorial equine nutrition podcast out there. Feed companies have their own podcasts, but we're doing this editorially. So while we might have a sponsor or something like that, they aren't guiding the content.
You're not bound to any one producer.
Right. Okay. Right.
You're not a commercial.
Cool. Correct.
Okay. Cool. And have you done?
There may be a commercial. There may be a sponsor and a commercial in there, just like your podcast.
Yes,
but
exactly.
We select the topics and the content and that sort of thing.
And have you done one yet?
I have done one.
What did you talk about? And who did you talk to?
Oh my goodness, Aviva! So many questions.
Yes. I want to know. Interesting people want to know.
The goal is to talk about like one topic per podcast. So we're not going to talk about lots of things. We're going to talk about one thing to keep it kind of short and concise, because we don't want to drone on for an hour about, you know, whatever. So they're fairly short. This first one is under 30 minutes. Most of them should be probably under 30 minutes. And there's going to be a single topic in each podcast. This first one, which just released last Thursday, so it is out there on your podcast players now, wherever you find your podcasts, is about like spring nutrition considerations, since it is spring.
Mm-hmm. And
pastures are changing. People, unless you live in Florida, are starting to ride their horses again. Do they need to think about, you know, what do you need to think about maybe increasing their feed or adding electrolytes as the temperatures rise or whatever. So that is the focus of this podcast. And I talked to an independent equine nutritionist. Her name is Dr. Kelly Vineyard, and she has her own company. She does consulting with veterinarians as well as with feed companies, but she is independent. She isn't.
I met her. I taught her.
Oh, did you really?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she's a massage rider. See,
yes, she came to the clinic in. Yeah, seriously. She came to the clinic in Ocala. She's tall. She's got a lovely horse. Oh my gosh, is her horse nice? And so she was super fun to teach.
That's awesome. Yeah, she's based in Gainesville. So yes. that was my first guest. And that was the first time I had ever talked with her. So that was fun. But yeah, and that's the other thing. We want to make this a little bit, my goal is to make it a little bit conversational, like we did, like we do on this podcast.
Yeah.
And talk to, so they're nutritionists, but like her, she is also a horse owner and a rider. So she understands the horse owner position and, what the horse owner is looking at and thinking about. So right now I don't have a co-host like you lovely ladies. It's just me interviewing other people.
Okay.
But we'll have, really good people every month that we're going to talk to.
So it is going to be interviews. It's not just going to, I was thinking, I wonder if you're just going to, some of them will be you reporting on information that you've taken in.
No, you don't want to just see me.
Yes, we do.
No, it's not. It will be me interviewing someone, but hopefully it will be a conversation. But they're the expert because I am.
And what's the name of the podcast for our listeners who want to go find it? Do we look for the horse?
No, it is called Feeding Horses.
Feeding
Short
Horses.
Short and simple. If you can't remember that.
Feeding Horses.
That is what.
Where would I go
feeding
if I
wanted horses
to listen to a podcast about feeding horses?
Feeding horses. And then if you really are desperate, you can go onto YouTube and watch the video because we are.
Oh my goodness.
We're producing it on YouTube as well. You can not enough to listen. You can go watch.
I gotta go watch. How exciting.
So you're gonna do your hair and look schmancy.
Right. Yes. I have to now somewhat care about my appearance. I don't know how successful I am in that. But
you're a horse person, it's okay.
I know.
Well, very cool.
And it releases it's monthly and it will release on the 4th Thursday of every month. And so we have one out in March and we will have another one out the end of April.
And we can give it a shameless plug every month because it will be 2 days after our release.
Well,
so,
there we go.
Yes.
Perfect.
And you can give us a plug.
That's right. We're all here to help each other.
We are. So speaking of helping one another, what does the horse have other podcasts?
And if so,
what are they about?
That is an excellent question. Thank you for asking me. The horse actually has three other podcasts. There's one, the one most people may have heard of is called Ask the Horse Live. And that is hosted by our digital managing editor, Haley Pfeffer. That's a live, you can go live on that one. It is a live Q&A. So it's not so much an interview. It's people submit questions ahead of time or they can submit them live and they have experts talking about it runs the gamut. We have one coming up in April on colic. We just had one on, aging sport horses, trying to keep them sound and comfortable. So all different kinds of topics. So you can submit a question ahead of time if you have a specific one, or you can submit one live if you're listening. But then it's recorded and released as a podcast. So if you're
so
not,
you can find it after it's gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can, if you can't listen to it live, you can listen to it as a podcast. So we have that one, and that one's very popular. We have a podcast called Equine Innovators that is hosted by our editorial director, yet another Stephanie.
Oh my gosh.
I know there's too many Stephanies.
I'm overrun with Stephanies. I have an embarrassment of Stephanies.
So she hosts Equine Innovators, and that's where she interviews like the cutting edge stuff, the leading researchers from universities or clinics about the latest studies and research and science that is coming out, again, on any number of topics. EHV1 was a big one last year for obvious reasons because of the outbreak and different sorts of things. And then lastly, we have a stable management podcast that is also hosted by Haley that covers just all different aspects of horse and farm management. So if you own a farm, manage a farm, have boarders, it covers a broad range of things as an owner or manager.
Do they talk about the difficult conversations that you have to have with boarders? Is that like one of their stable management
subjects? Probably. Honestly, I feel terrible. I don't know all of them that, you know, but okay. That, I mean, one of probably the most, I will say the most popular podcast last year from there was dealing with burnout.
I'm sure
they do talk about, you know, they do talk about that sort of things or how to, actually now that I'm thinking about it, like how to, present expectations to boarders and, understanding things like that. So yeah, so that it covers a lot. It's a much broader area of just, you know, healthcare and stuff like that.
And tell us the name of that one again.
That one's the Stable Management Podcast.
The Stable Management.
And they can all be found. Well, we're all on the Horse Radio Network, which is where we all are. Right. But you can find them anywhere on all your podcast players and stuff like that. So yeah. So lots cool. Once you're done listening to the Dressage Today podcast and you want a little, you want some other information.
We can hop over to Feeding Horses.
Yes. Right. And Stable Management. Yeah.
Innovators.
Yes.
Can I ask
very cool.
for the future, tell the Equine Innovators, I want there to be a podcast about equine degenerative myeloencephalopathy, because that is as hot a topic as the EHV. And Amy Johnson is right up the street from me in, you know, the New Bolton Center at the University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So that would be a fascinating topic.
I will say that we were talking about other topics to cover this year, and neurological ones are unfortunately
too popular.
Very popular. Mm-hmm. Some of those we were talking about neurological conditions. So
okay.
I will mention that to the other Stephanie.
Stephanie. I want to know also what's going on. Like personally, because I moved away from you and you've moved away from Aviva a long time ago. So like, what do you have going on with your horses? Do you still have two?
Actually, no, I do not still have two. Okay. I just recently, like a couple of weeks ago, found Lily a home.
Aww.
She has moved to Ohio to hang out. A gal that lived here in Florida a couple of years ago leased Lily and got along great with her and really fell in love with her and everything. And so when I had to make a decision about what to do with Lily, I reached out to her because I wasn't looking to sell Lily. I was looking to find someone who would, you know,
who would love her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she jumped at the chance. She was very, very excited. So she came and got her, and Lily is now in Ohio learning how to live in the cold.
Oh, wow. When did she just went up a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it was just, it hasn't even, maybe 3 weeks. It hasn't even been a month.
It hasn't been that cold.
Well, you know,
I know, compared to you guys.
If you're a Florida horse, it might be cold, Aviva.
I know, I'm sorry.
It's not going from Maryland to Ohio. It's going from Florida to Ohio. But anyway, she settled in really well there. This gal has another filly, a 3-year-old filly, and the two girls got along instantly. So things are going well. So good. I'm happy and sad. I miss her, but I feel good knowing that she went somewhere that she will be loved, which is what I cared about.
And how's Nadia?
And Nadia, and I can't, you know, I was thinking about this. I can't remember where things were with Nadia when I left this podcast. But if Nadia 3 years ago now, see, time just...
I know, and I keep in touch with you, so I can't tell you what because I know what's going on.
Anyway, I think it was 3 years ago. Nadia got a corneal ulcer that turned into a stromal abscess in her left eye, and despite our best efforts, we were not able to save it. So she lost her left eye, and I think that happened like right after I might have still been doing this podcast.
I think you were still doing the podcast. Yeah.
I think you
were. In the middle of all of that.
Yeah.
So, she did lose her left eye. She recovered from that very well. She was a real trooper and, you know, brought her back, started riding her again and everything. And she adapted very, very well. It's, you know, that there weren't any problems. A year almost to the day Oh. She developed a corneal ulcer and a stromal abscess in her remaining eye.
Stop it. Is that common? Is that, can horses be
prone?
Thank you. Prone to that?
Apparently mine is.
Yes.
Don't know. Might just be unlucky. There are some things in Florida that, you know, can cause this more frequently than other areas because
Florida.
Because Florida. So
move back to Maryland.
Anyways, so she got another stromal abscess, but despite this one being caught very quickly and apparently being very small, it still took 5 months of very intensive, expensive treatment, but we did save that eye.
And she has vision.
So, good.
There was no restriction of her vision in that eye at all. I mean, we caught that one fast and it was
awesome.
Good.
So, you know, I live in horror of that happening again, of course, but she because she lives outside, but she wears a fly mask all the time, you know, 24/7 and stuff. But I think part of what happens is they get very itchy because Florida.
Right.
And, you know, because I see her all the time rubbing on trees and stuff. And if you're rubbing and it just takes a little something in the eye there, you know, 'cause horses are always trying to kill themselves. But again, she recovered from that. It took a while, but she recovered from that and she's fine. She's semi-retired. I mean, after this, I'm like, no, we're not going to really work her or try to do any shows with her or anything. She's 20 this year. And, so a friend of mine half leases her and trail rides her and I ride her a little bit and she's enjoying being a semi-retired pampered princess, which is kind of what she's doing.
Such a lovely mare though.
She's doing well. So she's been good. So it's, kind of
mixed bag.
It's all okay.
Yeah.
It's horses. Yes.
Yeah. It's exactly. Yeah. That's all you have to say.
Yeah. Horses.
Do you think, do you miss riding more often or do you feel like your time's been so taken up with work that it's actually fitting in better?
Well, both. I do miss the, you know, us dressage riders, we can get a little intense.
Really? I've never heard that.
Even when we're not intense, we're still intense. And so I still feel that I want to go and work on things and all of that. So, and I do that with Nadia a little bit just to keep her so that she can, maintain a little bit of top line and stuff. But I do miss working towards a goal and that sort of thing. But the way life is right now, it works out. So we'll see. Okay. Maybe someday I'll, find a nice horse to take lessons on or something like your guy.
Audie the Wonder Horse.
Audie the Wonder Horse. And work on some goals for myself maybe someday.
Yeah. So you're not perusing, horse sale ads in your spare time?
No.
Okay.
No, there's not.
There are people that do that, you know?
Yeah. Well,
I have to admit I do.
Do you?
Well, I know. Do I see horses online and go, wow, that would be fabulous. But, realistically, no, I'm not. Okay.
I look at living quarter trailers. I don't like looking at horse ads because I don't believe them.
Oh, that's funny.
So I look at living quarter horse trailers instead. That's
true.
Yeah. I look at horses for sale and I think
trailers too.
I think that's a lot of money.
Yeah. And I know that's not going to be in the cards for me. So, it's pretty eye candy. It's pretty to window shop, but that's as far as it goes.
Okay. Okay. Well,
it sounds fun to catch up.
Life is good.
Yes. Yes. Good. Life is good. Yep.
Good.
And,
well, we do miss you.
It is fun to catch up. Well, thank you. Well, I miss
but
you
there wouldn't be room for two Stephanies and an Aviva and a an interviewee, you know? So
no, no, definitely not.
I love when people first hear that I have a podcast and they ask me who my co-host is and I say Stephanie or Stephanie. And in my brain, I see one with a Y and I see the other with an IE. And you guys are completely different, but you're both Stephanie. It's very confusing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. It makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But when I started this podcast, this is actually the third podcast I've done because before my career, I did a podcast in the Arabian horse industry, which is where I came from. So this is my third podcast. But when I started this one, I'm like, I have to go on the Dressage Today podcast so I can talk to you ladies and we can catch up. And because I'm sure everyone listening has been wondering where
did you go? Absolutely.
I'm sure it's been on the top of everyone's mind.
Oh, absolutely. So, absolutely. Go. They thought it was very sneaky that we just brought another Stephanie in and that it's not the same Stephanie. Yes.
Not the same. Now you've got to go all the way back to your Arabian horse roots and get on their podcast. And then you've really come full circle. That might almost be a figure eight.
I think so, but I appreciate you ladies being willing to interview me and taking a little bit of a step away from the traditional dressage content.
Well, we've done that a couple times.
Nutrition is important.
We've done that a couple times, and they haven't frowned upon us yet. So
they haven't kicked you off yet.
Okay. They haven't kicked us off yet.
Nutrition.
It really is.
So it all ties together.
Feeding Horses with Stephanie Ruff.
That's right.
Okay. You can find it on podcasts where podcasts are, and you can find it on YouTube if you're just dying to watch Stephanie and make sure she's dressed up instead of just chilling.
That's right.
And has appropriately faded out her background.
That's right. That too. Yes. It is faded out.
I have to admit, it was really interesting during COVID watching some of the morning shows where they you know, filmed from home and seeing the way that they kept their apartments. So, you know, maybe consider letting us see what your office really looks like.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no,
I don't think it looks that bad.
Yeah, no, she says.
You don't see the chaos underneath. There's a layer of chaos that's off camera. That isn't too bad.
Yeah, it's like the podcasters that are in, or the newscasters that are in their nice shirts, and then apparently they're in their pajama pants. So, you know,
exactly.
You're just going with the big guys at that point.
I am.
Well, thank you for coming and talking to us about your podcast, and we will make sure that all of our listeners, come over and listen to you as well.
Well, thank you for having me. And likewise, I will tell our people to come over and listen to you.
Have your people
thank
talk
you.
To our people.
That's right. Thank you.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Do you want to help ensure your breeding stallion's reproductive efficiency? Do you want to make sure your newborn foal has the strongest immune system possible? Studies show that supplemental vitamin E can support a stallion's sperm cell quality and motility and offset the effects of stress associated with breeding. They also show that foals of mares supplemented with vitamin E have more responsive immune systems than those that weren't. Elevate Natural Vitamin E can help. A research-proven, powerful antioxidant, Elevate maintains healthy muscle, nerve, and immune functions. It does this by delivering a highly bioavailable source of natural vitamin E that is preferentially absorbed and retained in a horse's tissues. For more information, visit kppusa.com or call them at 859-873-2974.
Today we are joined by Nama Segev Hassan. Joined us all the way from Israel. Nama, thank you for coming and being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
So you are the person that has brought Aviva over to Israel, and we got to hear all about her exploits and the amazing food. No matter where you took her, there was always fabulous
so much
food.
Good food.
Yeah, we have really good food because we're like an immigrant country and we have this fusion from all over the world. So really good food. And I'm a member of the dressage committee. And actually the dressage committee and Dana, our coordinator, is the one who brought Aviva over. And okay. It was a great success. And we are waiting for peaceful times that Aviva can come again.
Oh, that would be That's wonderful.
Fabulous. That's fabulous. I offered up my services as a biomechanics coach too, just so you know.
Oh, amazing. That's my personal interest, biomechanics. Wow. Okay.
Well, when I came back and we did the podcast and I talked about being in Israel, we got a lot of interest because, number one, we're in the U.S. and you're far away, but you also do things a little bit differently than we do here in the U.S. So we have some questions for you. But if we could start with some really basics, like when I came to Israel to ride in the Maccabi Games, people said, they have horses in Israel? And then when I told them that we were at the Double R Ranch and that there was raining, and they said, they ride Western in Israel? Yes. And so the question is, what kind of horses do you have and what kind of riding is there? And is something more popular than others?
Well, actually, you know, the riding's somehow continued since the British left in 1948. So they left some kind of structure concerning instructors' courses, similar to the AI British Horse Society system. And since then, Israel had some collaborations with the Netherlands, and our system is built a little bit of some kind of pieces from different other systems to fit our own small community. But it is growing. So at the moment, the most popular discipline is jumping. Most of the horses are imported horses from Europe, mainly Netherlands, Belgium, and Germany. So mainly warm lads. Then, of course, in the children division and the younger, smaller classes, what we call also school league, like riding school league, you can find some local bred horses, kinds of mixtures, like... you know, a little bit Arabian, a little bit Thoroughbred, a little bit quarter horses, Frisians, you know, half mixes, just sometimes horses that you don't even know where they came from. And some maybe riding ponies, also imported. The next discipline should be, we have some kind of, I mean, the most growing actually is the cowboy extreme.
Oh, interesting.
So if you say in general, we have the Olympic or the English riding, that's jumping dressage. And then we have the Western riding where we have reining cutting. We even have cutting. Mm-hmm. Nice. Cowboy extreme is the most growing discipline. And then we have also all around. So they have like Western pleasure, dressage, cowboy dressage or whatever. They have all these little different classes. And I think there's a very small scene of, they used to be endurance. I'm not sure how much is it on at the moment. And Arabian breeding. So Arabian, you know, shows for like beauty pageants. I don't know how you call them exactly.
So you don't have thoroughbreds the way we do here.
No. So...
there's no racing otherwise.
No, there's no breeding in Israel, not real breeding except Arabians. Okay. We don't have, we are a desert, basically. So we don't, land is very expensive because we're a very small country and highly populated. If you look in the map, you can hardly see us. So the word Israel is half on land and half in the Mediterranean Sea. We don't have even room for our own name. And so... we don't have land, and land is very expensive and not much rain. And so we don't have pastures. It's not really suitable for real breeding, especially not sport horses. So the sensible thing is to bring them over when they're 6, 7. Some bring them as 3-year-old or 4-year-old if they want to make the way from, you know, training them from scratch. But we don't have much foals. So no breeding, and then obviously racing. There were a few years they tried to have racing, but gambling is illegal in Israel, so there's not really a legal system where you can make money of it. So, you know, like in anything with horses, you have people racing or doing, but then it's not like in
for
Europe.
For the Western
or in the
discipline, where are the quarter horses coming from? Are they coming from the US or are they coming from Europe?
Yes, yes. From the US.
Wow.
Yeah, and there are a few breeders. There are a few breeders who breed quarter horses. There are a few breeders who breed all these gated horses, like Tennessee Walkers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And all these gated horses are very popular between the people who hack.
Yeah.
Before it used to be quarter horses, but the last, I think, 10 years, single foots, all these kind of horses, they're very popular, and there are a lot of, you know, people have a trailer and a horse and a jeep and they travel the country. And so some are imported, and there are also some breeders for these horses.
Okay.
But a sport horse, then you start riding him, you know, you like a warm blood, you don't start before three and a half. It's the investment is much more than quarter horses. They start at two. And also these gator horses, they start really early. So they you know, economically wise, it makes some sense. But sport horse doesn't really make sense.
Okay.
Especially that the majority of our members are young people or under 18. So they don't have the knowledge and experience to train a horse. They need a trained horse. So it makes sense to import the horse over.
The majority of your riders are under 18.
Do the majority of people that ride in some sort of system over there, Nama, or are there backyard riders?
So in general, number-wise and statistically, we can know what is going on under the Federation's roof because they are registered members, they compete, they are logged into clubs. And then we know more. But there are people who have some horses in their backyard, mainly in the villages, in the Moshavim. But again, as Israel is highly populated and mainly cities, the majority are horses are boarded in riding schools or facilities. And there are people who have them at home or a few horses, you know, together in a village. But I think most of the horses are, especially the ones, the sport horses. If they hack out, they can have a horse or two in the backyard, but they have to live in a village where they have a lot of land.
So the majority of people who have horses are in boarding facilities, and are they, and they're, and I assume most of them are part of the Federation, and you have a system for teaching and for competitions, right? So can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, so I'm a member in the dressage committee, but also in the education committee. And for the last, I don't know, 10 years, we're trying to have an integrated system. So we have the riding school where people start, you know, once a week coming, riding a pony or horse, learning the basics. And within the riding school, they have a system of, let's say, it's little booklets with some information about from grooming and riding and the tack and the disciplines. So it's like, I don't know, the French have it, it's called the galop. And, you know, every in Germany, it's badges. They have like the educational system where the kids, it's very colorful. They have like a checklist. I can do my stirrups. I can mount my horse alone. I can ride with no stirrups, trot and canter. You know, they have like a checklist every, they go in stages and they have little exams within the riding school and grooming the horse, picking up feet, tacking up, things related in the stable. And the ones who want to compete, they can compete within their own riding school. We call it regionally. So the judge goes to riding schools nearby. So let's say I'm judging four or five stables over, let's say, 2 weeks. I go and judge the kids. and they're competing one against the other. So as a team, so the team from one riding school is competing against the team of the other riding school. It's, and within the riding school, they have individual ranking also. So it's,
oh nice,
it's,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And there and the it's only it, at the moment it's only in the Olympic discipline, so dressage jumping, mainly dressage. Mm-hmm. And the jumping is, mm-hmm. we had a course designer build special courses from poles on the ground, trotting, going over in trot poles or canter, and then little crosses out of trot, and then up to 60 centimeters in a 20 by 40 arena using the lines of the dressage, meaning diagonals, 20 meter circles, mm-hmm. going in corners, making transitions. So it's not equitation. It's more simple. Mm-hmm. They can do it with the school horses. And it actually mm-hmm. teaches the skills of correct riding. Rhythm, balance, you know, riding the line correct, keeping the horse going nicely forward in a nice balance and correct seat. So they can do it either like in dressage, up to similar to intro, C and B, and training level, the easy test mm-hmm. training mm-hmm. level.
Yeah.
That's the regional league. And some do just dressage, some do the jumping, and some do combination.
It's and almost the like a pre-Caprilli test. Like we used to have pre-Caprillis with a little yeah. jumps added into the test.
Yeah. It's, but it is more jumping. So okay. it's, it uses the lines of the dressage, but they do jump. At the end, they need to jump. They can progress from one year to the other, and at the end, ride a 60-centimeter jumping course in canter. It's not easy in a 20
no,
by 40.
It's not.
Like,
not
it comes really quick. 40.
No.
It comes really quick. And technically, they have to be very good. And that's how we managed to have, because every riding school has at least a 20 by 40 arena. Not everyone right. has a big okay. jumping arena.
Right.
And we had
right.
to find the common demand that everyone can have it. And it right. really grew up the members in the federation. It's quite big now. And from there, some of them continue to the national competition that it starts. There we have the young league. It starts with the intro CB training level. And then the one who want to progress further, then they go first level and up. And we use the American test at the moment.
They have to receive a certain number of scores before they're yes. allowed to move up. Is that correct?
Yes. So they have okay. to, yes, they have to either they get 4 scores above 60 and then they can go to the next level, or 2 scores of 65 and above, or okay. 1 score of 70%. Then they can go up. Okay. Or if they think they are ready and they didn't have the scores, they can ask for a special test. So it's a normal test. It's one of the difficult mm-hmm. tests, either 2 or 3. And then they have 2 judges. They have to get 62.5% from both of them to qualify to the next level.
So sometimes I say there were a couple of those that I judged virtually for you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. That was interesting.
So let's say I have a student with a horse that she did, let's say, training level, and now she has a new horse and she wants to start first level. So she can do this test to check she's up to the level, and then we allow. So we had to find some kind of combination where not to hold the sure. ones who are ready, because before we had a system like the Dutch that you have to collect points. And only when you have like 8 points or 5 points, then you go up. And it took sometimes quite a while, and people got a little bit, you know, frustrated. So if mm-hmm. we had to find some way to say it's not so difficult. You can go up the levels, but you have to be, you know, at a certain level. You can't go up the level with 58%.
Right.
Yeah, let's reach the 60%. And 4 times, or 65%, 2 times, and then.
And is it? Does the score go with the rider? Let's say the rider gets a new horse.
It's a combination.
Okay.
So it's a horse and rider pair. That's a combination. If a rider is qualified third level, he can put a horse into third level.
On a new horse?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But he can't put he can't go with this horse. Even let's say I'm qualified third level with a certain horse. Now I want to go fourth level. I can either do it with the horse I qualified or start third level with the horse, the new horse.
But if somebody else bought your third level horse, they would have to start back over at intro training level.
I think now we allow it either training level or first level. They can choose.
Okay.
But usually most of the competitors come through the intro system.
I mean, Which makes so much sense.
So we have today in Europe, we have in Europe a few young riders. They're riding Grand Prix on their own horses now in Europe. They started the intro level in the riding school.
And that's wonderful.
That's great. So, really growing from the grassroots.
The system is working. Yeah. And then through this, so we had this regional league with these little booklets and these little exams that they can go up the levels. And then when they're 16, so when they finish the 10th grade, they can go and do in the summer instructor's course, a basic instructor's course. And in the competition scene, we have either the USDF tests or we have also age grouped tests that are like under 12, under 14, under 16, and then 18, right? They ride FEI test, like ponies, juniors, and young riders. Mm-hmm. So we're not really at the age group like Europe. We're a little bit like, say, juniors is not 18, is 19, and young riders is, you know, because we have the army at 18, everything is a little bit slower. Yeah. So, and we have to make a good progress till you're 18, because then at 18 things stop for a few years and not all of them come back. So some make a break and they maybe come back as parents or come back as adult amateurs later on.
So there's not time to keep riding while they're in their conscript.
Yeah. Unless they're athletes in their military service, but that's not so easy, especially if you're a male rider. If you're a female, it's easier, but if you're a male at the moment, no chance.
You
have to be a soldier.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the judging system in Israel. I know, you know, we in the U.S., we have the L program, and then there's the small R and the large R and then the S. How do you train your judges?
Okay, so as everything in Israel, we're a very small community. And for many years now, the championship and big competitions, we usually bring a foreign judge, either from Europe or from the US. And for many years, we had this FEI challenge that the FEI used to send two judges to Israel and do a clinic as well. But this, for some years, it's not the FAI changed the system, so it's not going on anymore. But the national routine shows we judge with our own judges. We have usually clinics. A few years ago, we had a big seminar with a judge called Gabriela. She built up a system, and we had a few days real courses with different levels of judges and exams. And then the younger ones obviously have to also do sit together with other judges and check their judging. And we also, for the last 2 years, have a collaboration with the FEI through the EEF. We have online seminars with videos and polls. We judge, we have to submit our scores, and then they give you feedback. And the last one we did, we had 2 out of 4 judges participating. 2 were chosen to go to Europe into in-person judging.
Exciting.
Yeah, and we were sitting in the seminar, we were with 140 judges from all over the world. Good, really good platform without, you know, having people to come over, or we have to go there. And
pretty impressive for a little country.
Yeah. And, you know, for many years, let's say up till the COVID, I think we had a lot of interest. Everybody wanted to come to Israel. We had the highest level judges, four star judges the head of the dressage committee of the FEI and judges sitting for the Olympics and World Cup games. They were judging in Israel. And COVID, everything's a little bit like difficult because once we get going out of COVID, then not much longer, you know, we had a bit of a time and then 7th of October hit us and then everything is a little bit
trickier. Lots of things changed.
But
Tell us a little bit about riding and training in a war zone.
Well, it really depends where you live. And it also changed within the last 2.5 years because after 7th of October, obviously the southern border was really a war zone. Everybody was evacuated from there. And also within, I think, less than 2-3 weeks, we evacuated all the animals. So donkeys and horses and sheep and goats. And so because it was not possible to get there to feed them and take care of them. Yeah. So at the beginning, people went quickly to give hay and stuff. And then we regrouped and reorganized. I just got an alert that we might have a siren. So I forgot to tell you that. I might have to stop.
We understand. You may have to leave us. Understand. How do the horses react to the sirens? Do they care?
Mostly not. If they hear the sound of the missiles, you know, intercepting and it's close, then there's a strong boom, then they might, you know, get a little bit spooked. But in generally, they're okay. Usually, and so after 7th October, the main thing was the south, and then later on the north joined, and then most of the thing was in the middle. But after, I think, 2 or 3 months, I think already in January, went back into competition because, let's say, the center of the country and the people who evacuated to the center could ride. And now again, now after the war with Iran, all the country has now and again, you know, missiles flying over. So we're not allowed at the moment to do anything. So even the schools, the schools in all Israel are not operating. They're all operating by Zoom. The only thing we can do is you can go to your own business. If you have a shelter and it's under 50 people, you can operate normal, but it's quite empty. And it's, on one hand, you can go and sit and have a meal in a restaurant and have coffee because it's a business. You're allowed to do it, but no theaters, no plays, all this thing is shut down like in COVID.
And I was going to say it's like COVID on steroids.
Yeah. It's a little bit because in between you run to the shelter. But again, the ones up north, they're in a war zone. Where I live, now I got an alert, stay close to the shelter, there might be sirens. And then sometimes there's a siren, and sometimes there's no siren, and then we just go on. And if there's a siren, I'm lucky I have a shelter in my house. So since the 90s, since we had the 91, the war with Iraq, where we had, again, missiles flying over from Iraq, some very clever person in the interior department said every house built since 1991, to get a permit, he has to have a safe room. And all the new buildings since 1991 have a safe room. It's
very
mandatory.
Smart. Yes.
And we built a stable 3 years ago. In order to open the stable, we had to bring a safe room for 40 people. In order to get a permit to open the stable. So every stable also has a safe room, unless it's an old one. And in the old cities, you have public shelters.
Yes.
Yeah, it is, you know. It's my father, I was visiting my parents on Saturday, and he said, well, since I remember myself, he was born in 1935. He said, since I remember myself, I'm in war. Since the Second World War, you know, the Italians were bombing Tel Aviv. And since then, we always have something, and it's somehow crazy but normal. Mm. Usually Israel is very peaceful.
Well, I feel very grateful that both of the times I was in Israel, I never heard a siren. I never had an alert. I never needed to go into a safe room. And the only thing that I had to worry about when I was there for the games was we were told we weren't allowed to talk on social media about where we were going. We could only talk about once we had been, because Americans are a target. And that's not, you know, that's not something we think about here in the U.S. We've been very, very blessed that, with the exception of 9/11, those kinds of things don't happen here. So it's hard to imagine. So, coming off that topic, because that's rough.
I've got a couple questions.
Okay.
Thinking back to the kids. I know here you have a barn full of kids and everybody loves their horse and they love riding and everybody's going to grow up and be a trainer. Is that a thought process? Is it a profession over there that a lot of people want to go into, or is it less of a profession?
Well, I think young people, especially the ones who compete or in really serious in it, not the ones who just come once a week and stuff, they really want to. And quite a lot of them, I think every year we have probably around 100 kids doing instructors courses in summer, like a summer camp, six weeks with boarding, with the horses from, you know, 6:30 in the morning till 5 p.m. And they do horses, riding, teaching, lunging, stable management, learning about the horse, veterinary, first aid, and all this they do. And then obviously we also have the yearly ones for the more adults, that the ones usually after the army or sometimes second career people who, you know, were high tech and now they want to do therapeutic riding or something like that. So we also have courses throughout the year. They take 8 months, once a week, 10 hours. They come to the stable and they do the same course, but spread out.
Okay. So wonderful.
We have a lot of people who do this initial step.
Mm-hmm.
Not many stay and choose this as a profession, because at the moment there's a very high demand for therapeutic riding, so they need to do an extra course for therapeutic riding.
Okay.
It's in very high demand because we have our public health service. They allow, let's say, for ADHD, emotional, communicative issues, autism, all kinds of these issues, your children's doctors can sign out therapeutic riding, therapeutic swimming, all of this. So, and it's within the public health budget. So at the moment, they're talking maybe to take it out, but at the moment, so a parent can take his kids and have a therapeutic riding lesson once a week.
Mm-hmm.
I think depends on, let's say, 50 treatments or riding lessons per year for around $10. There is obviously therapeutic riding for real disabled people. And now after the war, we have a lot of PTSD and things like that. And also, I don't know, you know, IGALA, the system IGALA? Treating without riding.
Yeah.
Just being around the horse. So there are different options. But there's very high demand for instructors and therapeutic instructors. And actually, there's more demand than there is enough professionals to do it, especially at the moment. Yes. Because, again, it's you know, it's very romantic. Oh, I love horses. I want to teach. Yes. And then at the end, it's standing in the dust with the sun with the sun on your head. Mm-hmm. And the school horse is not always cooperative. And then mm-hmm. the kids sometimes mm-hmm. are not so easy. And then you have the parents and then, you know, real life. And I teach in these courses. I tell them you really have to be passionate about horses and people and wanting other people to have this amazing gift of the horse. Yeah, if you're not crazy about it, you will not make it.
Right.
And to make it, you have to keep on learning and, you know, setting goals and, you know, keep on moving because otherwise it's too boring, you know. But if you mm-hmm. really like it, it's there's always something to learn and it's never boring. But you have to really love it.
Amen.
Otherwise, there are easier ways to make money. You don't get rich out of it.
No.
You have to be crazy about it.
No.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other question that I had for you, have you ever had Israel represented in the Olympics in either dressage mm-hmm. or jumping? And I actually know of a couple Israeli riders that are here in the States. Oded Shimoni has been here for quite a while.
Yeah. Oded Shimoni is for many years.
And then Sahar Dinosh.
Yeah, I know Sahar. We used to compete
okay.
together.
Okay.
And both I met of them are in my, used to be in my neighborhood.
Did they really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I don't know if you know, I'm friends with Eileen Johnston and with JJ. Your friends?
JJ is lovely. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Oded was, I think, our first real top international rider. He rode in the 2010 WEG, World Equestrian Games, and he was supposed to go to the Olympics. But unfortunately, our Israeli Olympic Committee did not allow it from some internal reasons. So unfortunately, he didn't go to the Olympics. But we did have two jumping teams. We had the first team went in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
We had three team members, and Ashley Bond. I think she qualified as the 11th in the individuals. She was 11th in the finals.
Terrific. Ashley Bond.
In Paris, we had a team.
Ah,
yes.
Very cool.
Yeah, and we got the score. We ended up ninth in the finals.
Impressive.
So, think about all the countries that don't even make it there. So the fact that your tiny little country made it and was in the top 10, that's amazing.
Yeah. And that's awesome. Other young, I know now in the World Equestrian Games, we have a dressage rider qualified. And And we have a few young Israeli riders working towards that. So mm-hmm. in a few years, I think we'll have more and more of them. It's not easy, but they're making real steps towards it.
Mm. Fabulous. Mm-mm-mm. Well, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about horses in Israel and dressage in Israel that you haven't already?
About dressage. Well, I think this regional and young league is so it's really helped us widen the base of the pyramid, and it's really and you also Aviva, you saw at the basics they ride ponies, mixture horses, whatever, and I think it's really nice they ride sit nice, they ride really nice harmonious sympathetic riding, and we are we slowly have the top riders riding in international, let's say abroad. And we have to get, I think, the middle. And I think the most difficult is keeping this nice, harmonious attitude going up the levels. That's the thing we have to, I think the whole world has this difficulty of going up the levels.
Yes, I think you're right.
Keeping the horses happy. And for me personally, as a member of the dressage committee and a member of the education committee and the one who teaches in instructors and trainers courses and as a chief examiner, I really, this is in my mind the most important, that they, you know, it's very clear that they come in for the love of the horse and they don't lose it. And they always remember the horse should be a partner and everything should be really harmonious. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's hard today to say, okay, take time. You need patience. It's not immediate. You can't go up the levels just because, you know, okay, you can ride a 20 meter circle and trot and canter. It doesn't mean you can go now to first level because you have to ride more difficult movements and not just kick your horse sideways to leg yield, you know. You have to sit better and have better clear aids and have a better understanding, and it takes
a universal problem of dressage.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I taught 52 lessons while I was in Israel, and I never felt that a horse and rider were poorly matched. I felt that the horses were appropriate. I never worried that somebody was going to get hurt. I was impressed with the willingness to listen. I was impressed with the accuracy, and I was impressed with just the desire to improve. I think that the way that whatever it is that you're doing, the way that you are starting these kids and moving them through, that is miraculous for me, because there is the desire, there is the system, and it's fabulous. So congratulations. I mean, I was very impressed.
So one more piece of the puzzle that I didn't mention is that we, in 2012, we started this project for youth. Today it's called Pegasus, but it started through Athena. Athena is a part of the Ministry of Sport, specific for promoting women in sport. So we won as a federation for 2 years. We won quite a nice budget to promote women riders or young riders in the sport. And we started with 12 riders, jumping and dressage. We did the sorting days. We chose 12 riders who worked together with trainers from abroad. And since 2013, we are actually trained by Markus Scharmann from Germany. He's an amazing, amazing trainer. He's actually now, he was at the time in the education department of the Federation in Germany, but now he's already head of their Olympic Committee facility in Warendorf. Yeah. So we are very fortunate to meet this amazing, amazing person, an amazing trainer, and he's so good with the young people and the professionals. And he implemented a lot of ideas of having a complete horse person with skills and competences, also as a person, but also with horses. And after 2 years, we changed into, so we had no more support out of this Athena Ministry of Sports budget. And we went on our own road through the federation and the parents. And actually, up to COVID, it was running smoothly for many years. We had training camps in Germany. He would come 3 times a year and do training camps in Israel. And then COVID
life
came.
Life changed.
And then, he landed in Israel. And I said, sorry, Markus, I have to take you back to the airport. We have something called COVID. And we were the first closing the country. And we thought it was crazy. Luckily, he, after a few hours, went back to Germany.
Yes.
He said, thank God you let me go, because we're blocking the country as well. It was, and then we managed to redo it. And now, he was a little bit after 7th of October once, and he was supposed to come now again, but now we told him not to come again. And at the moment, so out of this Pegasus project, the two committees at some point did a dressage young squad and a jumping young squad. In the jumping, we have a former Israeli trainer coming called Elad Yaniv. He comes and trains them in training camps in Israel, and also they can go to him. And we have Christoph
Umbach. We just had him here.
The dressage
was lovely.
He's coming from Luxembourg. Yeah. So he's doing the, he's doing the young squad of the dressage. And Marcus at the moment actually moved out. We moved him into coaching the coaches, trainers and instructors. So we have like, we made Pegasus into a coaching system. So actually we developed over the, let's say 12 years, the young squads and the now trying to promote the trainers and coaches through this education
system.
Pretty
impressive for a little country.
Yeah, we just, you know, we try to take, you know, like Marcus says, stealing ideas is okay. It's, you know, we had a lot of visitors from the Netherlands, from Germany, and everyone puts some influence into our federation. And then we shape it into what fits our little country with our small community and with our difficulties. So, and obviously passionate people who keep it going. You met Dana and you met Xandrine. So it's actually the people who make it go on.
Well, it's fascinating. Mama, in some ways, you know, the fact that you are small allows you to do the really exciting kinds of things. You know, because you can work as a small community and all work together. Sort of more like a GMO here in the US, but it's fabulous. And it's exciting to hear about what you're doing and how seriously you take things and what a great structure you have to ensure that everything goes well.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really, I'm so excited to share this with the listeners. I think it's great.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It was great meeting you and talking with you.
Thanks for listening to this special episode of the Dressage Today podcast. And a big thank you to the episode's sponsor, Tribute. You can subscribe to the Dressage Today podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. While you're there, please rate and review the show. Thanks again for joining us. I'm Alana Harrison, and you've been listening to the Dressage Today podcast.